From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, Texas women are paying the price for the overturning of Roe v. Wade. There are women in the state who are dying from miscarriages that were easily treatable before the fall of Roe.
These laws basically encourage malpractice, sometimes being faced between a decision of not offering the best standard of care or risking a felony for providing it.
And the state's Maternal Mortality Task Force announced it's going to ignore maternal deaths for 2022 and 2023. And how OBGYNs are fleeing the state due to fear of the state's anti-abortion law and prosecution.
So this is something that is affecting young professionals. This is something that is affecting faculty and established physicians. It's affecting everyone.
This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Before the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade on June 24, 2022, Texas had already effectively ended legal abortion in the state with the Texas Heartbeat Act, SB 8. That went into effect on September the 1st, 2021, and at that time, the law was the most restrictive abortion law in the United States. When the law went into effect, reproductive health clinics across the state shuttered, and Texans who sought abortion freedom needed to travel out of the state to access needed, sometimes life-saving, health care. For the anti-abortion forces, who believe the intentional ending of a pregnancy is morally wrong, SB 8 and then the Dobbs decision were victories. They wanted to, quote, save the babies. But what they don't want to recognize is that the Texas abortion ban is hurting many women who do want to carry their pregnancies to terms and have babies. But because of a miscarriage or another pregnancy complication, these women are frequently being denied medical procedures that could save their lives. That procedure is an abortion. Not an abortion to terminate a pregnancy, because that pregnancy is already over, that pregnancy has failed, but this is an abortion to save a mother's life. And because it's being denied because of a Texas law, women are dying. The nonprofit newsroom ProPublica has been investigating and documenting these cases. So far, they have uncovered three of these cases in Texas. Their most recent report tells the story of 35-year-old Portia Numezi. Kavita Serrana is a reporter with ProPublica.
Portia Gumezi was a 35-year-old mother of two living outside of Houston. She was a finance manager at a charter school system, and she was looking forward to having her third child. But she began experiencing a miscarriage in the third trimester, which is a very common, unfortunately, time. About 80% of miscarriages happen in the first trimester. Her bleeding became heavy enough that she went to the hospital, and she learned that she had already lost the pregnancy and she needed two blood transfusions. Now, the standard of care would be to offer what's commonly known as a DNC. It's a simple procedure that uses suction to empty the uterus and stop the bleeding. And in this case, experts told us that she was experiencing an emergency and she needed it quickly. Instead, her husband told us that the doctor suggested a different course of action, a medication that's commonly used to induce labor called misoprostol. And the problem was that this wouldn't work fast enough to slow her bleeding. So Gumezi continued hemorrhaging and she died hours later. We reviewed this case with more than a dozen maternal health experts and doctors around the country, and they said it was very clear that this treatment was not the standard medical practice for her situation. But our reporting has found it fits into a pattern of doctors in states that banned abortion that are avoiding offering DNCs. It's a quick procedure, it can be life-saving, but now it's considered stigmatized under these laws, under question if it is possibly illegal. And so instead they're turning to some other approaches, which in some situations may not be as effective. Just to expand on that, if it's helpful, this is because DNCs are also used for abortions and people are afraid that performing them can be illegal. So to be clear, this can happen even in cases where the pregnancy has already ended. It's just that the fact of performing this procedure could raise questions, needs more people to participate, paperwork to fill out. Sometimes the path doctors are more likely to take is just to avoid it, not even counsel the patient about it, even when it really is the best course of treatment for the patient's health.
miscarriages are not rare. If doctors are not able to treat miscarriages appropriately, that seems something that would be very frightening to many women.
That's what we're learning. And some women who've experienced miscarriages have reached out to us to review their records, and they've told us, you know, my doctor never even counseled me about the option of a DNC and what the risks and benefits would be. This is, you know, they've said that this is something they weren't prepared for. They didn't know what questions to ask. And so this reporting in these cases is really raising questions about how this care has been altered because of these laws.
What about medical malpractice? Is that something that can be used? Can you sue the hospital for not giving someone the DNC that they needed?
This is an open question. A lot of doctors have told us that their perspective is that these laws basically encourage malpractice, sometimes being faced between a decision of not offering the best standard of care under medical guidelines or risking a felony for providing it. And I think some of these families that we've been reporting on, they are looking into whether they can file malpractice cases, and we'll continue reporting on that, as well as how other agencies like the Texas Medical Board might be looking into these cases.
Yeah, so the question would be if a doctor saying we feared this Texas abortion law, even though there are exceptions in the law, those exceptions seem to be rare and select. And so is that a defense for not providing the needed medical care that would have saved a life, according to experts, and probably would have been easily available before the fall of Roe? This is the question that a lot of people have. And so they're wondering what their own reproductive future, what it looks like.
I think that's right. I mean, the important thing to know is that our reporting is finding that these abortion bans are affecting how doctors are approaching care for situations like pregnancy, complications, miscarriages, even when the patient has every desire to keep the baby, that doctors and medical staff are hesitating, sometimes transferring patients instead of treating them, or requiring extra documentation, which delays care, and sometimes not counseling them on all of their options. And all of this can have deadly consequences. There's a lot of discussion over exceptions in the law and whether the medical emergency language covers enough situations. In Texas, you know, these are attached to threats of up to 99 years in prison. But again, we're finding that these delays and lack of care are happening even in cases that should fall clearly in an exception. Like even if there is no fetal heartbeat, even if there's a specific condition that they have an exception for, sometimes patients are still not getting counseled or getting access to that care. So I think there's, you know, questions about if there's going to be more malpractice cases, but also there's been lawsuits against the state of Texas and complaints against hospitals for not abiding by federal law and stabilizing patients in emergency departments.
Kavita Serrana is a reporter with ProPublica. Her latest story is a third woman died under Texas's abortion ban. Doctors are avoiding DNCs and reaching for riskier miscarriage treatments. Kavita Serrana mentioned the work of the Texas Maternity Mortality and Morbidity Committee. This is a state-run initiative tasked with investigating and addressing maternal deaths and severe maternal complications, morbidity, in Texas. Its primary purpose is to improve the health and safety of mothers during and after pregnancy. It reviews pregnancy cases that result in the death of the mother, which happens at an alarming rate in Texas. The committee is supposed to find out contributing factors and recommending policy changes to improve outcomes. Texas has one of the highest maternal mortality rates in the United States, and it makes sense to find out what is going on, what is going wrong. But recently, the Maternal Mortality and Morbidity Committee announced it will not review cases from the years 2022 and 2023, the first 2 years after the Texas near-total abortion ban took effect. This is leaving any potential deaths related to abortion bans during those years uninvestigated. There is no direct evidence that this skipping over two critical years of cases is politically motivated. But if it is, then it wouldn't be the first time that this appeared to be the case, that politics seemed to be pulling the strings at this committee. In September 2022, just 3 months after the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, and 2 months before the midterm election that would pit Governor Greg Abbott against Beto O'Rourke, the state decided to delay publication of a report on pregnancy-related deaths. Caroline Kitchener is the national abortion reporter for The Washington Post.
You know, now we are 2 years out from most of the abortion bans taking effect and the Texas abortion ban taking effect. And I think everybody is really waiting to see, you know, did that affect maternal deaths? And I thought it was really striking to see that the Maternal Mortality Committee made the decision to skip over 2022 and 2023, which is the first two full years that the abortion ban was in effect. And what they said is just that this is an attempt to be more contemporaneous. They want to be looking at cases that are, you know, sort of more more timely in a more timely manner. But a lot of the members of the committee that I spoke to were really concerned because, you know, they just don't know. It's a big question mark what, you know, what the abortion bans have meant for maternal health. And the folks that I spoke to just felt that it was very important to be reviewing those cases very carefully.
So let's examine that logic that they want to look at the more recent cases and not so much the ones from 2022 and 2023. Couldn't they do both at the same time?
Well, I did speak to people that asked that question. You know, they say that it takes them more than a year to review a year's worth of cases. So they say that they operate on a backlog. And I think it's important to say that they have done this in the past. They have leapfrogged a couple of years. They did it in 2013. But I think it's the thing to know is that the maternal mortality committees, they're really the first opportunity that anybody has to get a big picture look at what the abortion bans have meant for maternal health. And so, yeah, I think a lot of people are asking, you know, this is a, you know, a lot of people said to me, you know, this is a noble goal to want to be more contemporaneous, but it's just not the right time because you have this sort of totally new factor in the mix, which is the abortion bans.
So the 2013, that's the year that the Texas Maternity Mortality and Morbidity Review Committee was formed under law, SB 13. So this is created by statute by the Texas legislature. Is there anything about skipping over these years that violates anything that they're supposed to do under that statute?
No, there's no, you know, I don't think there's any particular rule about it. It just, you know, raised, I think, a lot of eyebrows to do it right now at this moment, especially when we're starting to hear some reports of death. You know, ProPublica reported three stories of deaths in Texas that happened as a result in delays of care because of the abortion bans.
Right. So we have at least three fatal incidents in Texas of women right. who were pregnant, who ran into complications. You know, the type of medical care that they would have received before Dobbs, they probably, according to their reporting, these three women plus, they'd still be alive today.
Yeah, I think it's impossible to say exactly, you know, it's what would have happened, but it's the reports certainly suggest that if there were not delays in care, that these outcomes could have been very different. And, the folks that I spoke to, the doctors, you know, on maternal mortality committees across the country, they said, you know, that it's so important to ask the question, for each death, for each maternal death, was this preventable? And that, you know, the abortion bans just sort of put this whole new factor into the mix.
This review committee was created in order to look into the increased deaths that we have in the state of Texas related to pregnancy and trying to find out why this trend is happening and why is it getting worse and what can be done to try to alleviate, try to prevent these deaths. And so this is just not an academic exercise. We have women who want to have a healthy childbirth, and instead it is not, that's not what they're getting. And in Texas, the numbers are really bad. The legislature said, let's do something about this. We need information, we need data. And so this is what they're trying to get. But when they skip over 2 years, is that going to make that mission more difficult? Are we going to be blind for 2 years into why the trend continues to get worse for pregnancies that that end up with death?
I think it's a particularly concerning moment to do this, because if you just look at the numbers, you can see a huge spike in 2020 and 2021, which is the most recent data that we have for Texas. Between 2019 and 2021, you went from 17 maternal deaths per 100,000 live births to 37. So it's really been a really large spike. And COVID, I think, had a lot to do with that. Experts are saying that COVID had a lot to do with that. But, you know, the abortion ban did take effect in the middle of 2021. So I think a lot of folks are wondering what impact that might have had as well.
In your reporting, you quote someone saying that this is not the only way to track maternal health in the state of Texas. What else? What other ways are there?
You know, well, you have epidemiologists that are, you know, looking closely at the numbers, but they're not, you know, they're not digging into the causes and all of the different factors that go into every single case. So, you know, the committee members that I talked to really stress the unique role that these committees play, just really investigating and going in great depth to understand exactly what went wrong in each of these cases.
We do have anti-abortion advocates who say that the ban is not the cause of increased deaths in Texas, because they say under the law, they can still, the women who are having a crisis pregnancy can still get medical care. And they point to the numbers, there'll be like several dozen, you know, in a month who actually did receive that medical care. But
right,
we're also seeing reports like from ProPublica and others, the New Yorker also had a report about women who were turned away from emergency rooms, or women who were caused to bleed out or flee to the other states in order to get the medical care that they could not get in Texas. So we're getting two messages here.
Yeah, I mean, that is what you're seeing from the anti-abortion side. They are saying that it's really a matter of the doctors misunderstanding the law. They're saying that the laws are very clear. They include exceptions. The exceptions are for medical emergencies. So, you know, what I hear from doctors when I talk to them in these states with bans is that language is so vague. And so, you know, they will be permitted by law to provide this kind of care in, you know, when you know, reasonable medical judgment determines that there's a medical emergency. That's the kind of language that these laws use. But what they'll say is, you know, in that moment when they could be facing jail time, it's very scary to think, you know, is this person sick enough? You know, and if she isn't, am I going to go to jail? And I think that's just a scary place that doctors have at least told me that they're finding themselves in.
So the skeptic would look at the fact that the Texas Mortality and Morbidity Review Committee is skipping over these two key years. The skeptic would look at that and say this is a cover-up in progress. They don't want to examine these cases because they don't like what they would find. We don't know that, but that's what someone with a jaundiced view would probably assume. But when you put you appoint someone like Dr. Ingrid Skop to this review committee, and she is an outspoken person, you can hear her on pro-life podcast and saying things about how, you know, we have to end abortion entirely. And she's also a denier that the abortion ban is causing fatal outcomes in pregnancies in Texas. When you appoint someone like that to this review committee, it does seem to, you know, add some juice to that idea that there is something nefarious afoot.
Well, I do think it's important to say that the committee members that I spoke to who were very critical of this decision to skip over these years, they were also explicit in saying that they had heard nothing to suggest that, you know, there was any kind of cover up at play. And that was the reason. So I think that's important. I think that's important to say here. And, you know, I think it's something that certainly I think journalists should, journalists like me should continue to look into, what really happened here.
Caroline Kitchener is the national abortion reporter for The Washington Post. Her story is Texas committee won't examine maternal deaths in first years after abortion ban. The Texas stringent abortion prohibition has motivated OBGYNs to flee the state. There was already a shortage of these caregivers in Texas, particularly in remote and low-income areas. And these are doctors that do a lot more than just provide abortions. OBGYNs provide essential care for women during pregnancy, childbirth, and postpartum. If OBGYNs are scarce, access to prenatal care, safe deliveries, and postpartum monitoring can become limited. This can result in higher rates of maternal mortality, infant mortality, and complications during childbirth, which may have long-term health impacts on both the mothers and the babies. OBGYNs are also the primary health care providers for women with specific reproductive health needs, such as family planning, fertility issues, menopause management, and gynecological conditions. Without sufficient OBGYNs, women may face long wait times, delayed care, or may be forced to seek care from general practitioners and other specialists who are not well equipped or trained to handle these complex issues. OBGYNs are essential for preventive care for women's health, such as cervical cancer screenings, breast exams, and family planning counseling. A shortage could lead to missed opportunities for early detection and prevention, contributing to worsening health outcomes in the long run. In Texas Exodus, New Yorker reporter Stephanie Taladrid reports on OBGYNs leaving the state and details how one residency program that brought hope to the Rio Grande Valley shut down last summer.
And we'll start by saying that of all the states in the country that have banned abortions, Texas has the largest number of reproductive age women. We're talking about roughly 7 million. So that obviously makes it very interesting to us. And one in six of those women live below poverty. If you look at a place like the Valley, which, as your listeners know, covers the southernmost tip of Texas, it has very high rates of uninsured people and very high rates of poverty, too. So the region in itself tells you something about some of the broader problematics that women in Texas are facing. In addition to that, the reason why I decided to focus on the Valley is because there was a new medical school that opened there in 2016. And when it opened, some of the leaders of the school presented it as an institution that promised to transform the future of residents and students of the Valley, right? For a very long time, whoever wanted to practice medicine in the Valley had to move to San Antonio, to Austin, to Houston to get a medication. And for the first time, this big area of Texas, this underserved area of Texas, was getting a medical school.
And so this was a medical school with the University of Texas, Rio Grande Valley.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's when Tony Ogburn comes in, who is the doctor that we decide to focus on in the most recent piece that I published, The Texas Exodus. And Ogburn had been working with underserved communities for a long time. He had most recently been at the University of New Mexico, heading its OBGYN department there. And he was very interested in the ability of starting a residency program in OBGYN, also the first in the Rio Grande Valley, and in teaching medical students who wanted to specialize in this field. And so 2016 was a year of promise for the region. He got to the region, recruited faculty members and residents from around the country, and they started working with a local hospital called EHR. And everything was going very well. We had four classes of residents, and some of the initial problems started surfacing with SB8, the 6-week ban.
And the heartbeat bill.
And as your listeners might know, SB8 has made it very difficult for doctors to practice medicine. As he put it to colleagues at the time, the standard of care can now be construed as a felony. And it's worth remembering that SB8 has a provision which encourages civilians to sue anyone suspected of aiding or abetting an abortion in exchange for a $10,000 reward. So all of a sudden, nurses started threatening Ogburn and his colleagues for terminating the pregnancy of a patient whom they believe was at risk of dying. He was forced to meet with patients behind closed doors to prevent those kinds of threats. And at the same time, the list of conditions that they could treat narrowed substantially, which is something that we've seen across the state. So lethal fetal anomalies, for instance, were out of the question. Patients had to carry those pregnancies to term only to see their babies die within seconds. PPROMs, or preterm ruptures of membranes, as they're known, also went untreated. And there were even anesthesiologists at the hospital who refused to treat life-threatening complications such as ectopic pregnancies. So a lot of the doctors who had followed Ogburn to the Valley, hoping to bring about change in the region, realized, I see things go wrong with pregnancies all the time. And now there's no guarantee that the right thing can be done under the law. And so by the time Roe v. Wade was overturned, Ogburn had already lost half of his full-time faculty to SB8, and the residency program collapsed within a year because there was a fallout with the hospital. And only one of the residents ultimately decided to start a practice in Texas. The rest have all left the state.
Two things are happening. One of them is the reduction or elimination of this important procedure for healthcare for women. But the other thing that's happening is the loss of medical students who are not going to get the training that they need to, in order to do this important work.
Right. And so that is something, what's interesting is that when this program was still in place, Ogburn had to arrange rotations for his residents and connected with colleagues around the country for them to be able to get abortion training outside of Texas, which is something that is happening across the state. But in addition to that, some of his faculty members who were interested in developing a subspecialty in complex family planning and were hoping to apply for the board started to worry, because suddenly, you know, complex procedures like DNEs, which are recommended for second term abortions, and also very much recommended for miscarriage care, you know, were out of the question. And so the faculty members themselves, not only the residents, worried that they were not able to train their skills, and that by extension, they would not be able to qualify for the boards that they were seeking in complex family planning. So this is something that is affecting young professionals. This is something that is affecting faculty and established physicians. It's affecting everyone.
Stephanie Taladrid is a reporter for The New Yorker magazine. Her story is The Texas Exodus. We have a link to it and the other news stories that we've been talking about on our website, tpr.org. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. Email us at texasmatters@tpr.org. There are past episodes of Texas Matters on our website at tpr.org. Find and download Texas Matters wherever you get cool podcasts. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.